topic session number 19943, Reel 1.
Professor Bashkevich, Reel 1. Where were you born, please?
Well, I was born in a small village in central Poland, Linów. It was the name of it. It's very near to Sandomierz, to bigger town Sandomierz.
Which year was this?
1925.
Can you tell me something about your family background, please?
Well, my father was a owner of the smallish landed property. And then later, actually, he lost it and he became the sort of administrator of the bigger property of my uncle. My mother was from the eastern Poland. My father's family also came from the eastern Poland, but both families moved to the central Poland after the insurrection of 1863. People who took part in the insurrection either were sent to Siberia, killed, or sent to Siberia, and those who managed to return were obliged to move from one district to another, not stay with their own properties in their own district. So that was the reason why both of my families, my father's family and my mother's family, moved to that part of Poland.
Which particular places in eastern Poland did they come from?
Well, they came from the what Russians were calling gubernia, which is equivalent of the county, of the Minsk and of Lithuania, of present-day Lithuania, that means, which was part of Poland before partition, near Kovno and those places. And actually, it was about four generations ago. And three generations ago, the family moved slightly nearer to Poland, and that was the place when my grandfather was forced to leave and move to Central.
Where did you go to school?
Well, before the war, I started in Warsaw, in the, sort of school run by Catholic Church, Marian Brothers, or Marian Fathers, very near to Warsaw. Now it is a part of Warsaw, in fact. And then after, of course, the wars stopped me, so to speak, halfway through the secondary education. And then I joined, after concentration camp, I joined the Polish army. And in the army, I was in the school. I was educated. And then later, I went to the School of Art, Regent's Polytechnic School of Art.
Now, can you tell me what you were doing on the 1st of September 1939, please?
Well, I was at home. I just returned home from my uncle's property near Lublin. I just managed to return home. So when the war started, I was at my parents' house, which was, in fact, the reason why I returned was not because I was expecting the war to start, but simply I was hoping that I would start the school next week later after the break of the war. It was the beginning of the school year, of the academic year.
What happened to you on that day?
Oh, nothing in particular. Well, I mean, I was not shocked. Honestly, to be honest with you, I think I was excited. Something happened. First of all, it would be no school, which is a very good thing for a young boy who rather prefer to be at home than to be in school. I was of the opinion, if I have any opinions at the time, that of course Poland would win the war. Well, young people tend to be like that. After all, you see, my oldest brother, by two brothers, my oldest brother was Murka. My older brother was an officer in the Polish Air Force. So I remember clearly. Last time I seen him, which was last time I seen him in my lifetime, in fact, it was about very likely Very likely it was June of, probably just the beginning of July 1939. And I was talking with him about war, and he was almost convinced that the war would start, and he was rather pessimistic about the results, which I was very surprised. He, the officer of the Polish Air Force, being pessimistic about the possible results of the war. In fact, when the war started, he was not present in Poland, because being the engineer as well, not only the officer in the Air Force, he was sent abroad to France and eventually to England to negotiate the purchase of the aeroplanes to the Polish Air Force. And so the beginning of the war, just the first days, I mean the whole Polish campaign, he was in safety, in relative safety abroad, and probably that created the complex. He was absolutely determined to be the first to shoot the German aeroplane during the Battle of Britain, and he succeeded. One day before officially his division, his squadron was involved in the battle, and for that he received 5 days home arrest from his English officer. At that time, the Polish squadrons were flying with the English heads, and very strict admonition. And eventually, the next day, the squadron started fighting.
What was his name?
Paszkiewicz, like Ludwik Witold Paszkiewicz. He was well. He was not the first Polish officer Polish airman to shoot the German plane in England, but he was the first in the 303 squadron. He is actually buried here. In 6 weeks' time, he was shot down.
Can you take me through what happened to you during the rest of September 1939, please?
Well, I was staying at home reasonably quietly. We were not particularly molested by German army. In fact, they just passed by us. Because the first German divisions, first of fighting divisions, so I don't even think that they were particularly brutal or whatever. They just went through. It was when the second wave of the German army moved, that was a sort of SS, and very soon police and so on.
Can you tell me what happened?
Well, you see, very early. In fact, I do remember almost precisely the date, because in October, early October 19, I think it was about 6th or 7th of October 1939, I already joined the underground, Polish underground. In our school, which I attended before the war, it was a highly politicized school, and we already were trying to play politics, and we were involved in it. Because of that, surprisingly, it was a very stupid policy, very stupid politics, but surprisingly it do help, because we already had this sort of organization, sort of pseudo-secret organization. And this organization, under the German occupation, instantly became the secret patriotic organization. So I joined very early, joined the organization, and of course, paradoxically, my older brother, older by 8 years of me, the middle brother, in fact, who was not involved in any politics before the war, not as much as I remember, actually was taken by me into the organization. So we were in the organization, and as a very young boy, I was of course not regarded very seriously by my superiors, so I was used to arrange the transport of the newspapers, well, clandestine newspapers, clandestine weekly, from center, from Warsaw, to the districts when we were working together. So when the Germans arrested us in February 1941, really, we spent quite a long time actually working in the organization. When German arrested us, that was just the period when I was involved. My main duty was really to transport this once a week, to transport these papers, of clandestine papers, from Warsaw to our center, and then eventually distribute it.
Can you tell me any incidents that happened to you whilst you were working for the underground, please?
Well, near incident, if you would like to call it like that. You see, during that period, Germans were very regularly checking in trains or in buses. They were checking passengers. They were, in fact, not, as far as I know, not particularly looking for secret organizations of any, or clandestine organizations of any kind. They were simply looking for the for people who were trying to smuggle the food, because it was a food shortage, so people were coming and going from place to place, transporting. And when they were searching, I'm pretty sure they were searching for food. The trouble was that if they would find out this clandestine press, well, probably I would be in trouble. So such a near accidents happen nearly all the time. Fortunately, I never was stopped. I think the reason why, that practically everybody, I think it was a very general in Poland at that time, people would instantly recognize young boy traveling with the light luggage being in some way involved in some sort of secret organizations, and they, even their smugglers, actually, food smugglers, would help me. Would give me advice, move to another compartment, be careful, not to be nervous if the SS would... I don't think it was SS. It was actually, I think they call it railway police, which was organization very likely organized and controlled by the SS, but they were not SS, strictly speaking. So eventually, we have a system. I don't know if you are familiar with this method of clandestine organizations, a system of five. So you would know only your colleagues, five of you. That means you are one of them, out of them. A leader of such a group would be the member of another five higher up in gradation, and so on. So because of that, it was not too risky, even if in one point the organization would be well deciphered, it would collapse. Because at least in theory, at least only this group of five were at risk. But it did not exactly work like that with us. You see, unfortunately, one of us, which I'm not blaming him, he belonged in a stupid, idiotic way to two organizations. And he was arrested in another one, you see. But once he was tortured by Gestapo in the district town, he could not carry on much longer, and he gave our names as well. Well, in this case, he involved not only his colleagues, but he involved completely different organization. I think it was very silly of us to have him, but we didn't know that he belonged to organization. He was ex-army petty officer, I think sergeant major or something like that in the Polish army. And I don't know for what reason he joined the... My guess is that it's only a guess. My guess is that this another organization would like to have some information about us. So they probably sent him to join us. So that's how I was arrested. Where organization helped us, my brother and myself, to start to run the small shop. A sort of paper, ink, things of that kind. Sort of normal writing material. It was very useful because the paper was packed in the packets, and the packets would be very useful to put the clandestine press in it. So the couriers would come in to our shop, so our little shop, and only give the word, and they would receive exactly ready for them. So, and one day, it was this, unfortunately, this February 1941, instead of our courier, came to Gestapo, one in civilian clothes and another soldier. And they were not even asking questions. They instantly arrested us, both of us, my brother and myself. And they took my brother instantly back to the headquarters, to big town, to Lublin, and left myself in the local prison. And after, I think, 8 days, 7 or 8 days, I don't remember exactly, they sent for me as well. And then normal sort of interrogation, you know, beating and so on.
How did they interrogate you?
Well, you see, if one has to be honest about it. Can close that. You see, when fortunately for me, I was the last one interrogated in our case, in our group, and I was very young. Consequently, it was a reasonably unpainful. Well, it was normal beating, but I was not strictly speaking tortured. It was going on for about, I think 4 or 5 days. Well, I was definitely for about a week in the prison when they interrogate, because they had the separate prisons, big prisons for normal. They keep people there, but intensive interrogation, it was a very small place. It only, I think, 6 cells there, each one double. That was a trouble, because if you return after interrogation and you really feel it, you are very painful, really, particularly if you are not accustomed to be beaten. And then you find out that it's another person in your cell. You don't know who he is. And you may assume quite easily that even if he is not an informer, that being beaten himself, he would repeat whatever I said to him. So you have to keep quiet, which is not helpful, really. You would rather prefer to have a chance to talk about it. So it was a sort of, even psychologically, it was but when they ended with me, they asked me to sign the sign whatever I said or did not set. And they gave me, it was a colossal amount of paper. And the translator was a Polish judge from before the war, but he was speaking German, and SS was using him, you see, as a translator. It was a Gestapo officer and this translator, who was not taking part in beating, in torture, not at all. He was just sitting there and translating whatever they said to me, or vice versa. When they when they ended, they read to me. He said, "Well, sign." But this officer, obviously this Gestapo officer, was speaking Polish. He did not say one word in Polish, but obviously he understood, So it was unnecessary to have a translator. Doesn't matter. They probably done it there. So he said to this translator, read him what he's going to sign. So he read it in German. And you see, it was a problem. I knew that it may happen that they would start to beat me again, and nobody liked it. But I don't know how. I picked up the courage and said, well, look, how I can sign this paper if I don't know, if I do not speak German? I don't understand what's there. And this translator became furious. Oh, it started swearing. You prefer to be beaten again. And then this officer, this Gestapo officer, no, he has a perfect right to know what he's putting his signature to. You see, organization supply us with a vast amount of information. We are learning by heart what, during the interrogation, what we can possibly say. They were giving us the names of those people who are already killed or who escaped abroad and things of that kind. I think it was very wise, because if you are saying something, you sound convincing to the interrogator. So, in fact, it was a very honest report of the interrogation. And then I signed, because it was no objection to signing this document. And then this Gestapo officer said in German, but the translator translated, now in the first transport which is going to Auschwitz or Poświęcim, of course, he said he used the Polish name of the camp, the first transport, you would be sent there to Auschwitz. And normally people live about 6 weeks there. Well, you still have about 2 months, because probably in 2 weeks' time the transport would go, you would probably have about 2 months to live. And he said in a sort of rather quiet voice, well, goodbye, and stretched the hand towards me. I didn't know what to do, but of course then I did shake his hand. And that was the end of my interrogation. And indeed, in about 2 weeks' time, I was sent to Auschwitz. And just imagine, 2 months later, the new transport from the same prison in Lublin arrived, and my interrogator was in the transport as a prisoner. He was stealing gold watches from prisoners. And Germans don't like people stealing gold watches from prisoners. They sent him to the camp. And he was killed in front of me, because when new transport from your place, from your prison, arrived, everybody in the camp would be interested if there are no colleagues, friends, whoever. So I went there, and I noticed this translator, but I did not shake hands with him or whatever, or say anything. But I noticed that he was going, he was there. So I was speaking with people who were involved in my case, in fact, who arrived by this second transport. And who is Kapo?
Yes.
And Blockeltester. Well, Blockeltester is the prisoner, but the head of the barrack. Kapo is the one who is responsible for to control you during the work. Also prisoner who control you during the work. Working hours. So one of them was passing by, and they don't like to find anybody on their way when they were walking through. You see, they were rather tough. So this translator was standing, and I think it was either Oberkapo or Blockeltester pushed him, and he said, "Do not touch me. I am a Volksdeutsch. Volksdeutsch, that means German by more or less by election." And then the man said nothing, look at his number, I clearly remember the number, went out and returned, four of them returned, and they started. I think in about 5 minutes he was dead. They were beating first, when he fell down they were kicking. So The translator, in my case, I would not call it strange justice, but it was a sort of justice that he died, well, very long time before me, you see. So that's how I arrived to Auschwitz.
When you first arrived, what happened to you when you first saw the place?
Well, I do remember very clearly. You see, at that time, and they actually reconstructed, when they unloaded us from the train, it was a sort of goods train, I suppose, 100 of us per carriage or something. When they unload us on the railway station in the camp, which was not very far from the front gate, we started walking in this. They form us in the sort of column, and they order us to go, well, beating to some extent all the time, but it was a sort of routine treatment. And I was helping my brother, because my brother was extremely badly treated during the interrogation. It was really covered with wounds. I think he was trying to do better than he was even expected to do by organization. He chose to say nothing, absolutely nothing. He not even used those information which the organization gave us the chance to, you know, to help ourselves. So he simply said, I am not saying anything at all. And they really beat him extremely harshly. So at that time, he hardly can walk. So I was helping him. So we were walking one with another. And, we were walking in the direction to the gates, and on this gate is this famous sentence written in German: "Arbeitsmacht frei." The work would give you the chance to return home or whatever. So I do remember this gate very well. And lately, probably 2 years ago. It was the first time when I went to Auschwitz to visit the place. And they are either reconstruct the gate, or the original gates are still kept with these inscriptions.
What effect did it have on you to go back to the place?
Well, long before I visited my second camp, which we were together, which I met him, in fact, the Mauthausen-Gusen in Austria. Because I spent about a year and a half in Auschwitz, and then I was transferred to Mauthausen-Gusen. And I think that time, it was a shock. Not necessarily unpleasant. You know, here is the place when I suffer so much, and yet I'm still alive. But when I return to Mauthausen, which is now make a sort of, how to call it, museum of a kind, then it was this unpleasant shock. You see, what they done, in my opinion, overdone. They reconstruct those barracks which were used for special punishment. They reconstruct the wall at which people would be shot, and so on. But everything looks a bit too new, too bright new. You see, I remember this wall very well. It was done from the sort of pressed together some straw or something. And it was in pieces because they were shooting quite a lot of people there. And now it's a bright new one. So I was shocked in a different way, you see. I was shocked by finding the place, almost a fake one,